Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant for support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It's Monday, 6:30, December 2nd, 2002. Time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers, and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. Tonight on Geek Speak, we're going to be talking about your technical issues and problems. Call in anytime with any question relating to technology, and we'll do our best to answer it. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, tonight's Geek Speak is all about you. Call in, ask us a question, make a comment about technology, and we'll see what we can do to include you in the show. Again, the phone number's 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're going to have a full house tonight. Miles is on the road. He'll be here in a minute. Sean Cleveland's here. John Tracy's here. And also, Chris Dunphy. Chris Dunphy works at Palm. He's here pretty regularly, but not completely regularly. And he's here today with some great technology to share with us over the air. And we'll start the show out with that. Hi, Chris, and thanks for coming back to GeekSpeak.
Hey, Lyle. How's it going?
Pretty good. You've been busy.
I've been around. But
you've been busy playing with new nifty toys.
I have all the toys. Yes, all of the toys. So it's not even Christmas yet.
Okay, Sean just pulled out a very, very thin keyboard for a Palm. And it's lovely.
Yeah,
what is it?
This is something new. I've got the I kind of brought the new arsenal of the latest Palm OS devices. I actually don't work for Palm. I work for Palm Source. We make the operating system inside all the Palm OS power devices. And what this keyboard you're drooling over is the new Palm Ultra Thin Folding Keyboard. It's about half the size of the prior generation folding keyboard, and yet it's still a full size, full motion, full touch typing keyboard that just folds up and fits in your pocket, and it'll work with any of the Palm hardware devices with the universal connector on them.
Do you know the metric dimensions of that device?
No.
Okay. Let's do some comparative size, about the size of a piece of bread.
Yeah, actually about the size of a slice of bread. That's
yeah,
it. And
I
it's
like
a
that.
Full keyboard. It just folds up and clips and one little pop, and you've got a keyboard that you can sit on your lap or actually use on an airplane tray table.
For a Palm hardware?
This will work with any of the Palm branded, so the Palm hardware devices. You could buy this at the Palm online store at palm.com, and the list price is $99.
Hey, Miles, thanks for joining us.
Hey, how's it going?
And Sean, you want to chime in too? Hi.
Hi, Lyle.
So out of the stuff that Chris has brought, out of the stuff that Chris has brought, Sean, what do you like the most?
I kind of like the Sony Clio.
Okay,
actually,
let's talk about.
As much as I'm interested in the.
Talk about the phone with the Bluetooth.
Okay.
First off, I should probably tell people what the hell Bluetooth is. I was showing this to my relatives, and they're like, "Blue, what? Somebody go see a dentist?" And but no, what Bluetooth is it's a short range wireless networking standard. One way to describe it, Bluetooth is designed to be a wireless wire. So things that would normally have a little cable between them, you can pair devices so that they have a secure private connection between them, but there's no longer a wire.
And we're talking about close range, personal
close
network.
Range. The range of Bluetooth is about 30 feet. So the idea being that you'll use Bluetooth to synchronize with your computer between your computer and your PDA via Bluetooth. You don't need to worry about the cable with your cradle and stuff anymore. You could just put them on the desk and say go, and they could talk to each other.
Okay, you've got a great trio going on here.
So I think this is like the ultimate little Bluetooth trio. I have a Sony Ericsson cell phone. It's the Sony Ericsson T68, and you can buy this now from several of the GSM carriers. I think AT&T's got a special on this right now. The T68's got a Bluetooth radio in it, and so I've paired that with this little tiny Bluetooth headset. So it's a wireless headset, no cable between the headset and the phone. You wear the headset on your ear, and you've got a little button on it. You can answer a call when it rings. It rings in your ear. You press it and answer the call. The phone is still in your pocket. Or you can actually do voice dialing via the phone. So you press the button on the headset, and I say, Lyle Troxell, at home. And it'll ring. It'll start ringing at his house, and I've made a phone call without ever touching my phone.
Or letting people around you know what my number is.
Yeah, actually, or letting people know what the number is. Or,
okay, but that's kind of, I mean, that's convenient if your phone number is inside the phone. Well, yeah. What if your phone number is like in your palm device?
So the kind of the finish of this trio is the Tungsten T. This is one of the first Palm OS 5 devices, one of the first two Palm Operating System 5 devices to ship. This is the newest thing from the Palm Hardware Group. It's, you know, neat little collapsible design.
It's really small.
And it's got a built-in Bluetooth radio. So even though it's really small, it's got Bluetooth built into it, and it's got a quick dial one thumb lookup. So with just by twitching my thumb, I could look up, here's the CTO of our company, and I can, bother him.
Hey, what's that phone number?
Yeah. here, I just press tap. I've only used one finger. I've just twitched my thumb a few times, and I press this button, and now I'm gonna crank call him in the middle of the night, and it connects from my palm PDA to my cell phone, and you see my cell phone. I'm not touching
the dial.
It's dialing, and I'm stopping the dialing before I ring him at home on his cell phone, and then it would transfer from my cell phone to my earpiece. So I pulled my palm out of my shirt pocket. I flipped my thumb back and forth three times. I did a quick lookup out of the 1,000 numbers in here, and the call is on my headset, and I've never touched my phone. And it's a wonderful little combination. It's really addictive to start using this.
And they look cool, too. Oh, nice lights, yeah. And everything.
So what's the retail price of these items, and what would it cost somebody to do what you're doing now?
I've seen this T68 phone. AT&T had a special I saw at Best Buy. I think this phone was like $150, which is an incredible phone with a color screen and Bluetooth. It's one of the. I think this is one of two Bluetooth phones you can buy in the United States right now. A Bluetooth headset, there's a whole bunch of them coming to market this next year. This one was $160. It's a Sony Ericsson HBH30.
It looks about the size of an old-school hearing aid with an extender microphone that goes around to your front of your face.
Yeah, it's got a little battery that kind of hangs behind your ear. It's actually pretty comfortable wear, and it could flip so you can wear it on your left ear or your right ear. It's just a little flip, and you can practice. I practice for like an hour in front of a mirror, putting it on, taking it off. Cause that's
so do you look like James Bond yet?
Well, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, you slap it on there. And then.
I thought that'd be heavier with the battery in it.
This?
Yeah, it's actually really light.
It's really light. You almost don't notice yourself wearing it until you get all the envious looks from all the other geeks as you walk by through fries. You know, they're like, it's a great conversation starter. People come up and say, "Is that a Bluetooth headset? Oh, wow."
All right, we're going to start taking calls, and I'm glad that Miles showed up because we're starting out with the next question from Bruce in Monterey. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello. I'm just glad Miles is there. I've got a question for him on Linux.
I feel loved.
Silence.
Oh, go ahead.
No, we're waiting for questions.
I was admiring the love coming from the other side of the phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've got a Linux question. Upgraded from ASUSA 7.3 to 8.1, and it's got the newer startup files where each particular run level goes through a separate subdirectory depending on what run level you're at. Goes all the way up to run level 5. Do you know anything about that?
Curses. You're using a distribution I don't know very well. It does, in fact, have run levels for 1 through 5?
Yeah, well, you know in the old Linux how it would go through an init dot D, I think, or an RC file for the initialization? Well, now, rather than everything being contained in one file, they're all in a series of small subdirectories. So from what I can tell, you drag stuff in and put your initialization script into a subdirectory. It works, except it doesn't. So I was just curious if you had any...
You're describing sounds very much like what Red Hat's been doing for a while, which is having a symbolic link to the script in a directory called rc.5, for example. Or RC.3.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And how Red Hat does it is when you make the symbolic link to the script in the init dot d directory, you preface it with either a K or an S and then a number between 0 and 99. Mm-hmm. And what that will do is the lower the number, the quicker it runs, or rather, that's the order of which it runs. So the higher the number, the longer it's going to take for it to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as something specific to SUSE, other than just knowledge from what the other distributions are doing, that's about all I can tell you, unfortunately.
Well, you've given me plenty, and I think you may have solved the problem, because every other file in there is with a number on it.
Oh, great.
Except for the stuff that I put in, which does not have a number.
Great. That, at
does it have to be only a number in Red Hat?
Miles?
In Red Hat, what it does is you have either an S or a K. A K being it's going to kill it or it's going to stop that service in that particular run level, or an S, which means it's going to start that service. Then the number, which so you can make sure that one script is going to start before another script, and then the name of the script.
Okay, with an underscore or anything, or just that?
Actually, it doesn't matter.
Wow.
Because all that the loader script is basically doing is looking for those first three characters, the K or the S, and the two-digit number afterwards.
Well, Bruce, thanks for the call.
Oh, yeah. Well, you may want to have a little bit of mention for Miles here, because this latest version, it looks like halfway between a Macintosh and Windows XP. Very attractive.
Yeah, the Linux distributions in general have been getting very good. I recently installed Red Hat 8 on my laptop, and it is so much better. They're all getting so much better.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be, well, what I think is the operating system of the future. It's going to look and act and behave like a Macintosh, but underneath the surface, it's going to be Linux.
Great. Well, thanks for the call, Bruce.
You're welcome.
That's a little confusing to me, because isn't the current version of Macintosh a lot like a Linux?
It's all converging. The singularity. No, watch out for the singularity.
Bruce, thanks for calling in, because we normally don't start the show out on such a technical note, and it's great when you can lose 50% or more of the geeks in the call. So that was a good call. And Miles, I'm glad you were here, because I didn't know that they were doing. I didn't know what was going on right there, man. I was really scared.
And for all those you wondering about run level is just the state the computer comes up in. Since Unix is kind of by default a multi-user system, run level, what is it? Run level one. Is single user
mode. It actually depends upon the distribution, but you'll have, in general, you'll have run level zero is halt. In other words,
run level zero is no users.
Yeah, run level six is shut down, at least on Red Hat. On other distributions, it might be different. Run level three is normal. We have multiple users. Run level five being with X Windows, a graphical user interface. But
to put this into a realm that other people understand, Macintosh kind of has two, Macintosh OS 9, which people are used to, kind of has two type of run levels. With extensions on and without extensions, and then Windows kind of has two run levels or equivalently safe mode or not safe mode, or and actually there's another one, DOS mode, which is totally.
I don't think Microsoft calls it not safe mode. That'd be an appropriate term.
It's pretty good. Well, I want to let people know you're welcome to call in with less technical questions. You can call in to ask us about what kind of hard drive you should upgrade, ask us about what kind of portable device you want. You can call in with a lot of questions. The phone numbers again are 476-2800. Or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. Call in with any technical questions you may have.
On the next Mind, Body, Spirit, host Ben Saltzman welcomes Robin Lynn McCrae. Robin is a counselor who uses a technique called biographical analysis to help people understand themes, patterns, and meaning in their lives. This new way of looking at one's life history can point to new directions in spiritual significance.
John, that was beautiful. Sean.
They welcome your phone calls for advice and assistance. That's Mind, Body, Spirit, Tuesday at noon on listener-supported KUSP. Thanks. Okay, I'm done now.
On the next Talk of the Bay, host Deanna Zachary talks to members of Big Brothers and Big Sisters. They need 50 new members for kids on their waiting list. Find out what's involved in being a Big Brother or Big Sister on Talk of the Bay, Tuesday. Tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. here on KUSP. And you can find more information on our local talk shows at kusp.org.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio. Also in the air room, is Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, Chris Dumphy. My name's Lyle Troxell. We're talking about your computer problems, questions, concerns. The phone numbers are 476-2800, 1-800-655-5877. See, John, I can cut you off because I control the board. No, go on.
We can't see each other. We've got the phone bank in between us.
I think that's the problem.
I was going to say, I recommend folks call in if you're thinking about getting someone a handheld device for this Christmas. This is a great show to call in because Chris isn't here every show. So
I try to be, but
you're not.
You're a busy guy. He's got to travel. He's got a hard job. He travels around the world buying cool toys and evaluating them. Poor guy.
Okay, from my hometown, Kelly in Ben Lomond. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Oh, thank you. My first question, I have two. My first question is, we're in Ben Lomond, and I've heard that there is no DSL available.
Yes, because the phone company hates Ben Lomond.
That's what I've heard.
It's something about the cool zip code. You know, 950
right,
05 just doesn't get anything.
Are you sure there's no DSL available?
Well, I'm not sure, and that's my question. Everybody that I've asked has turned me down flat, but I'm wondering if you know more or if you know...
Where are you?
Yeah, how far from Highway 9 are you?
What's your address, phone number? No. About where are you?
And am I single, right? No, we're actually walking distance to the town, so...
Okay, are you... Okay, that kind of answers my question, because if you're closer to Brookdale side, you're actually in luck. But if you're walking distance downtown... I mean, Ben Lomond in general, you're walking distance from anywhere, but...
Right off Love Creek.
Right off Love Creek, yeah. I think that there isn't anything there. What's happening is that you have to be close to a central location that they put a router in, and they haven't done that in Ben Lomond. So if you're close enough to the Felton side or you're close enough to the Brookdale side, and Brookdale's really getting service through Boulder Creek, then you might get lucky. One possibility, I think Chris did this. Is it right, Chris, you did this? You decided to tell the company, just plug me up anyway, right?
I live outside of Boulder Creek and technically out of range, and I made a big stink, and I convinced one DSL provider. They're actually Raw Bandwidth, so you might want to try them because they'll do this for you.
Okay.
Rawbandwidth.com, and I convinced them to tell Pac Bell to, despite me being technically out of range, just go and try it. And they did, and I have a perfect, great, fast DSL signal.
Oh.
So it might take some finagling, and Ben Lomond might be just too far out of range. But
it also might have a colo in Ben Lomond that doesn't have the equipment. But I have a feeling that there is no colo in Ben Lomond, and it's actually on either side of it. So, yeah, you're probably getting service from Felton or Boulder Creek co-location, or the central office location.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd go for it. The only issue here is the way Chris had to do it is he said, I'll pay for anything. Just do it.
Right.
So you might have to pay some money and risk it. But if you do succeed... Please let us know so we can tell everybody to do it.
Okay, I will.
And another tip. I live in Brookdale, and I actually get DSL off Highway 9. And both Chris and I have had to cut our speed down in half to ensure that we stay connected. So if you do get it connected and you're dropping out a lot, you may want to consider doing the same thing.
Okay.
I didn't know you solved that. That's great.
Yeah.
Kelly, you had a second question.
Yeah, my second question is, my in-laws live in New York, and we're trying to think of a fairly inexpensive way that we can show them live images of our little one-year-old. And I've heard that there's a webcam setup you can get and an internet site that you can log into, but I don't know specifics about that.
Well, there's a whole lot of ways to do that. How much do you like your in-laws? No, okay. there are things right from skipping the internet completely and buying phones that do it.
But those are pretty expensive.
Yeah, and they're not
compatible that great.
With anything.
Yeah.
And the other way to do it, is to get a webcam. If either side has a static IP address, when you get DSL, you can request that. It's going to cost you a little more. Then your side needs to set up a webcam, a web server, and have the webcam servicing images. And then they'd access your machine just like you'd access any URL. If you have a dynamic address, it's a little more difficult, but it's not that hard. If you call them on the phone or send an email saying, we're online now, come and look at this, then you can do it. And most every cam software now provides this functionality for you, a webcam service. Are you on a Mac or PC or Linux?
I'm on a Mac, but I think they're on a PC. Does that make a difference?
No, it won't, luckily enough.
Okay.
Does anyone using the cam software?
No, but aren't there websites that allow stuff like this? Like, they're primarily designed for businesses for meetings over the web.
Yeah, there's definitely meeting connections. I can't recall any URLs. Anybody?
I can't either.
Yeah, you got to be careful as you go looking for webcam stuff. You might find a whole bunch of X-rated things. But there are, and I'm trying to remember the name of the site. It's actually a former coworker of ours, Brad Dossland, was at a site that...
that's because they went under.
Oh, they went under?
Yeah.
A lot of them go under.
Yeah.
The thing is, you don't actually need any kind of web service.
Yeah.
You can do it by yourself. It's just a little difficult. What in general you're going to be doing is you want webcam software that offers a web server in it. And it acts like a web server, like if you pass a URL and you request a server, just like Google does. There's a website. And your camera software actually provides that website. So then they access your machine's IP address or the number representing your machine. And the server's responded with sometimes it's a progressive JPEG, which means your browser can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody got any ideas on simple steps to do this rather than going into the full TCP/IP stack?
No, aren't there a company that sells, I think there's several companies that sell picture frames that you hook up to the internet.
Oh, really?
You can push pictures to.
Yeah, it would do the same thing.
So basically it's sitting on their table, and every now and then you push a new picture to it and they see something.
But they
want to
do video.
Yeah,
video is a little more complicated.
All right, I'm gonna go with this one. Contact your local computer shop. A good one in Santa Cruz, you're in Bellman, so a good one in Santa Cruz is Santa Cruz Electronics, and or you could probably call Cruzeo. They might be able to help you out.
Okay.
You'd be able to find this. It shouldn't be that much of an issue, but I think Santa Cruz Electronics is going to sell something like this that would do it for you. Okay?
Great. All right.
Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Bye. All right, we got calls flooding the airways. Hey, Janet from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I have a virus question.
Can you speak up?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm running Windows 98, and I was notified by a friend that she had inadvertently passed on a virus to me through Outlook Express. So I checked the file folder she named, and sure enough, there it was. Apparently, according to her, this virus has a 2-week dormant period before it starts its destruction. So my question is, if I deleted it prior to the expiration of the 2 weeks, is it really gone?
Okay, wait. All of us are going, oh, hoax, hoax, hoax.
Oh, good. I like that.
Did your friend contact you in person to tell you about this?
No, she sent me an email.
I don't think she really did.
And actually, what this sounds like, there's a hoax that's going around.
The teddy bear hoax?
Is this the teddy bear?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Microsoft has a file that is part of Windows that is hidden in this that is in some directory that has an icon of a teddy bear.
Oh.
And so somebody started this rumor that that's put there by a virus, and if you find this teddy bear, you've been infected by a virus. But
I'm so happy.
Some jokers at Microsoft, because that actually enables Java support in Windows. And some jokers at Microsoft thought, like, Java's a big joke, so they gave the Java thing a little teddy bear icon that looked very unprofessional. And so people fall for this. They delete this file, and then they've disabled Java support in their computer.
I've disabled Java support?
If you delete that file, you'll disable Java.
Oh, it's already gone.
That's not good.
You can probably go just search, find the net, find a hoax site. Probably go to, like, McAfee.com or something that has good information on viruses, and you'll find stuff on common hoaxes, and they'll tell you how to get that file back, because you're going to eventually run into something that won't work now because Java's been disabled.
Yeah. Well, since I've notified everybody on my address list,
let them know that it's a hoax.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
She could probably go to sun.com and download a better Java client, couldn't she?
True, but you might want to make sure that the built-in stuff is fixed as well.
Yeah. You know, that's a great... I'm glad Janet called about a virus question, because my father sent me a note yesterday, the day before, saying... there's this application I'm supposed to run to fix a virus that was emailed to me by a virus company. Okay, let's go on the list of do's and don'ts on the computer. When you receive a file from somebody, don't open it, ever, especially with .eax.
Yeah,
company
.eaxe.
And that's an attachment, not the email itself.
That's right. Companies that send companies that do virus protection will never send you updates. They won't email things to you. Email's not a secure way of doing things, so they won't do that. They probably won't even notify you of any viruses. Hoaxers do that, and virus manufacturers do that. So don't open. Is this everybody agreeing with this?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't open a file that says, run this to fix your machine. Also, email notifications of things like the teddy bear, teddy bear icon, those are always fictitious. If you ever have a question whether you're going to should run this or not, you feel like you should, first off, don't. And then go up on Google and do a search for just some weird string of text in the email that you got. And what you're going to find is that bit of strict text will show up on some site that says, yeah, this is a virus. For example, lots of times virus packages or even hoax packages that talk about a problem, their grammar is very poor. And from the grammar being poor, that might trick you off. A company is not going to send something that doesn't have good grammar.
And when you're saying virus, you mean you really meant hoax, right?
Both virus and hoax. Sometimes there's an attachment that's actually a virus, and sometimes it's just a hoax about how to damage your computer.
And it's always a good idea to keep your antivirus software up to date.
Yeah.
So make sure you download the latest definitions.
Yeah, it's worth spending the 5 minutes to set it to automatically download the latest stuff, and you never have to think about it again.
Definitely get virus protection.
General rule of thumb is, if you're not sure about it, don't open it.
It's always a good one. Rebecca from Watsonville, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Excellent.
Can you pick up your phone?
I've been holding.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, what's your question about Macs?
Well, my Macintosh died tonight. This morning, I have an iMac, and... It worked this morning. I printed checks off, and then I went to turn it on, and nothing happened, and so I pushed the restart.
Did anything happen when you pushed the restart?
No. It like, no sound, a minimal sound from the hard disk. So I thought, okay, I'll unplug it.
Minimal sound, but there was some sound?
There was some sound, but it didn't sound like the hard disk engaged. My only thing is, when I upgraded to OS 9, I had something similar happen. I tried to restart it with
the shift
disk
down. By putting the CD in and restarting it and holding down the C?
Right, exactly.
Uh-huh. And no good?
No good. It makes the nice sound, ding, and then...
Do you have any kind of display going on? Anything happening on the monitor?
Nothing happening on the monitor.
So it stays black? And if you just...
But the green light stays lit.
The green light stays lit. If you let it just keep going, does it sound like it's starting up?
No.
It doesn't sound like it's starting up. It doesn't start off CD.
Yeah, it's a 1999... Yeah.
I know that there's a hard drive problem that can cause this. I thought it was totally bogus when I first heard about it, but you can actually have a hard drive problem that will cause this symptom
Same
where
symptom.
The screen won't start
I
up.
I saw the symptom in G4, and luckily there's a reset on the motherboard on the G4, but opening up an iMac is not something you want to do.
Yeah.
I would take it in.
Yeah, if you've tried starting it off the CD, the other thing you can try is resetting the parameter RAM, but don't bother because it's not going to fix it. Unfortunately,
I thought it should just start. I've never had it not start off the disk.
Yeah.
So just pushing the C key, pushing the restart key, that's supposed to work.
Well, you can hold the shift down too, but if it's not booting off the CD, yeah, you're pretty much...
Yeah, it's a hardware issue.
I'd take it in.
Yeah.
Hardware issue. Okay.
Yeah. One other thing you could try doing is it's possible your power switch. Are we talking about a color iMac? Are we talking about the new flat panel ones?
No. $19.99.
It's possible, like when you push the power button in, it's getting stuck in, something like that. You can try to wiggle that and see if you can free it. Sometimes dirt gets fussed around it, but.
So you think the restart key or the power key
is getting power
stuck? Okay, because I do have a child and
yeah. The other thing you could do is something on the keyboard that could be stuck. You could just unplug your keyboard. And okay. Power it on and see if it comes up. And if it comes up, then you at least isolate it to your keyboard.
Okay.
But I don't think it's that either.
Okay.
Sorry.
Now, these are all things you can try before you take it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck.
And obviously, you know, unplug the power cord, plug it back in.
Yeah.
Make sure the power strip's on, all the obvious things. But if you're getting the green light to come on, that's probably not it.
Peter from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, this is Peter.
Hi, welcome.
You close at 7?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll be quick because I had 3 questions. The lady that called before about the transmit video, for many years, my parents and my children live in Europe. I'm using a 8x8 telephone camera. It plugs right into the phone. The camera plugs right into the phone line, and it really works.
Who is it made by?
8x8.com. The old 8x8 people, and it's a DV324. Costs about $500 a piece.
And you have to have one on each end?
No, you don't. That's the nice thing. Yeah, because, you know, one side is the geek with the computer and the webcam and the right software, and the other side, my parents still will never have a computer, and they have this phone. So that works.
How is the picture quality on that?
It's horrible, but if you set it to 1 second...
Right.
For one frame, it's pretty crisp and clear, and it has a pretty big screen.
Well, thank you, Peter. Let's go on to the next question, because we are running out of time. Go ahead.
Yes. About a year ago, you had a great guy, expert on video. I would like to have that name of that person.
What was it pertaining to?
It was about video editing, and it led to a $3,000 purchase of mine to burn my own movies on DVDs, and I'd like to have more questions about video.
Well, the only issue, I really don't know what show we're talking about. Why don't you go ahead and email me, lyle@geekspeak.org, and I'll try to find the show with you.
lyle@geekspeak. No problem.
.org. And your last question?
I have a Sony Vaio, and the software is not acceptable. And I bought DVD-IT software to burn DVDs. And again, I have a hard time with all the different settings. Now, my friend has an iMac, and she produced a great video within a day. And she
isn't it? Max video editing, simplistic video editing is really great. It's very easy.
I got the wrong computer.
Well,
Microsoft has a new beta version of the Windows XP Movie Maker software, which looks pretty impressive from the beta I've seen. You could download that from Microsoft.com.
Does it burn DVDs?
Yes, it will burn DVDs.
What's that called again?
It's the Windows XP Movie Maker, and it's at it's the version 2. There's version 1 comes with Windows XP. It's very limited.
Yeah, I have Movie Maker.
Yeah, so version 2 is up
Not
on Microsoft.com.
Maker.
Peter, thank you very much for calling. Go ahead and give me an email, lyle@geekspeak.org. I'd love to talk to you further about your video editing concerns and questions. We're out of time on GeekSpeak again. We'll be back next week. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room has been Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, Miles Elam, and Chris Dunphy. Thank you very much, Maggie, for answering the phones. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. KSP is looking for a Windows 2000 networking consultant who is willing to donate all or part of their services to reconfigure our small business LAN. We need someone who can quickly evaluate our current situation, make the necessary changes, and train a member of our staff in some networking basics. If you feel like you want to help out KSP, we'd love your support. Coming up next is Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo. We're on the web at kosp.org. Stay tuned now for Stardate.
Stardate, December 2nd. As we head into the coldest part of the year, our northern listeners have some frigid days ahead. Times when it's so cold that the air itself seems frozen. But on remote little Pluto, freezing air is more than just a perception, it's a fact. The planet's atmosphere is freezing and falling to the ground. It won't thaw out again for a couple of centuries. Pluto is the farthest planet from the Sun. On average, it's about 40 times farther from the Sun than Earth is. But Pluto's orbit is the most lopsided of the nine planets in our solar system. So Pluto's distance from the Sun varies by almost 2 billion miles. It was closest to the Sun more than a decade ago, and now it's heading back into deep space. Pluto is never very warm, but as it retreats from the Sun, it gets so cold that its nitrogen-rich atmosphere should freeze and fall to the ground. Astronomers found evidence that this freeze-out is underway earlier this year by watching as Pluto passed in front of a star. By measuring the starlight,